welcome to Season 9, Episode 9 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 26th of April, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Laura.
Hiya!
Hello, you sound much better than last week.
Good, I'm less coffee.
Excellent. And Mark, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
You sound the same as last week.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Thank you for laughing, Laura. Martin and coffee. Oh, my God. And Martin.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
No, I'm very well, but you do sound different from last week, and it's almost like that's the second time I've asked you that this evening.
I'm getting a sense of déjà vu.
Yes.
This is
we'll
going
come
well.
To that in a moment. So, Laura, what have you been up to since last time?
Someone was showing me Kerbal Space Program, the game, and I wondered if any of you had heard of it or played it. It seemed like the sort of thing you might have.
What are you saying about us?
Well, specifically you and Alan being the gamers.
We're going to get people writing in and saying, those guys aren't proper gamers. I've seen his Steam library. He plays rubbish games.
I have heard of Kerbal Space Program, and I might have watched like a YouTube video of it, but I've never been inclined to actually play it. Is it good?
Okay.
I think I got it as a low price thing on maybe one of those...
Humble Bundle?
That's it.
Yeah, you can get it through Humble. It's like you're managing a space program and you build a rocket, and the mod that we played on, you can do science. And for every bit of science you do, you get credits that mean you can spend more on your rocket the next time around. And you've got to get the rocket into space, and we got as far as the moon in the end, which was quite cool.
I'll get you.
It was very exciting, actually, because you got to go to the moon. And then kind of slingshot yourself in and out of orbit to get to places. It was very cool.
Huh. I exploded on the launch pad when I played it. So I found it too sciencey for my liking.
It is very, very physics realistic. And my physics wasn't all there either. But I did learn quite a bit.
Awesome.
So, Alan, why is it you sound a bit different this week?
I don't sound different. I sound exactly the same. I sound like I've got exactly the same recording setup, which is a lie. I have a really quirky recording setup because I'm currently sat in a hotel in Prague. We're having a sprint, which is what we do periodically in Canonical, get together, work together on a bunch of specific tasks. And it's quite intense. But the nice thing is you get to see your co-workers because, as you know, I work from home. It's really nice. It's nice. Prague is lovely. It's a very pretty city, and everyone I've met so far has been lovely. And the beer has been great. And the beer has been fantastic. And the food has been fabulous. And it's good. I've got another few days of this.
So what's
it's enjoyable.
What's your recording studio like?
It's kind of like, well, if you, in your mind's eye, mm-hmm. like picture a desk.
Yeah.
With
a mixing desk, I imagine, with soundproofing.
Lots of buttons and knobs and twiddles.
Okay, replace any picture you have of buttons and knobs with pillows. And that's pretty much what we have here.
I think we need a photo of that in the show notes.
I'll do my best. It's quite precarious, but yes, I'll see what I can do.
So if we hear a clunk, that could be you.
It'll be quite a soft clunk because remember, it's all pillows.
Oh, enough of this pillow nonsense. Shall we get on?
Yeah.
And now at last, it's time for the news. Alan, what's new in the news this week?
Well, would you believe it, regular as clockwork, Ubuntu 16.04 and all the flavours, all of them, every flavour,
strawberry,
has been
raspberry.
Released. Well, not quite that flavour, but yes, all the flavours have been released. 16.04 is an LTS and it came out on Thursday the 20-something of April, 21st. That's the one. Martin knows all about this because he was very involved in the release cycle, weren't you, Martin?
I played my part, yeah.
Oh, you play it down so much.
It was the Thursday wasn't the issue. It was the 2 weeks of sleepless nights beforehand that were kind of grueling. But yeah,
Thursday. So you mean 6 months of sleepless nights beforehand?
So are we going to talk about it in this episode or the next episode?
We'll do it in the next one, I think. We'll batch it all up and talk about it then. But yes, it's out, and you can. I'll give you the short version. Is you could do a clean install of 1604, or you could upgrade an existing 1404 or 1510 version to 1604. But you won't actually get, if you're a 1404 LTS user, by default, you won't get prompted for the upgrade until 1604.1. That's our standard procedure, is you don't get the prompt until the 0.1 release in a couple of months' time.
I think that's due July.
Yeah, three that's months. Right. But yeah. It's not a problem to upgrade in the meantime.
No, it's all working.
You could force it. Yeah, you can force it. But, you know, some people, we'll talk about it next time.
Okay.
And in shock news, Ubuntu Snap confinement has been circumvented.
No way.
Yeah.
Who am I getting?
Really? Maybe X11 is insecure. So Matthew Garrett has published a blog post in which he publishes a proof of concept demonstrating how Ubuntu Snap confinement doesn't work. And in that, he uses a 10-year-old X11 application called Evil Teddy to demonstrate how it can steal keystrokes from any other X window application, including Firefox and terminals and things of that nature. I can tell you're all stunned by this news.
No, I was waiting for Laura because I could see some questions building.
So the Snap thing is meant to make it so that each application can't talk to another application unless it's given permission to.
That's absolutely correct.
But X11 apps
don't have that.
X11 apps don't have that, so it can just talk to any of them.
So when you make a snap, by default, it is entirely isolated from any other package or part of the system. But there are a number of interfaces that you can choose to enable as the developer or creator of that snap package to give that snap and its applications additional access to the system. And a couple of those interfaces, there's one called Unity 7. You can imagine that gives you access to Unity 7 and Dbus and all of the things that Unity 7 requires. And there's another called X11. And in the developer documentation, it states quite clearly that if you enable either of those, they require access to various Dbus services, and that the environment does not prevent eavesdropping or apps interfering with one another. And in the example snap that Matthew created, he's enabled the Unity 7 interface, thereby circumventing the app isolation.
So this is basically a demonstration of the problem the lack of security which X11 has had since forever, which is one of the main drivers behind the development of Wayland and Mir.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, kind of has a point as well, because at the moment there is no interface to create a snap that interfaces with Mir, for example. And if you were interfacing with Mir, then Mir has isolation and confinement. And I spoke to some of the developers earlier today, and they've explained that the interfaces to Mir will be coming as the mobile platform migrates from Qlix to Snap packages. And at the moment, it's documented that, you know, if you use the Unity 7 or X interfaces within a Snap package, then you basically unconfine the application with regards to the graphical interface.
I mean, he has a point, and
he does.
You know, it's valid to say that X11 is insecure and Snap packages aren't a panacea yet that fixes all the security woes that there are on the Linux desktop. And, you know, that's a perfectly valid concern to have. And we're not quite at the destination we'd like to get to yet. I think there might have been some overeager marketing that might have implied that we were there already. And I think that probably what made Matthew feel uncomfortable and feel the need to, you know, express himself via this blog post, which is fair enough.
Yeah. So Microsoft is suing the US government over unconstitutional cloud data searches.
Wow.
Basically, they're sort of doing an Apple, really.
a reverse Apple. Is that a thing?
I don't know. My head won't fit around that in a minute. So the government asks if they can search the cloud data.
I don't think they ask.
Well, no, but then they say that
they do it.
The company cannot tell the people whose data has been searched that the data has been searched even. So Microsoft is saying that's not fair. They should be able to tell the people that it's been searched. But some of the warrants or whatever the government has means that it's permanent, some of the things. So they can't ever tell them, and they want to be able to.
Which is right.
And this is reasonable, I think. Yeah. I think I would support Microsoft in the action that they're taking. It seems a reasonable thing to say, we have customers and they're storing their data on our systems, and you as the government are asking us to do something which, you know, we've got a contract with our customers, we're providing a service to our customers, and you are effectively asking us to breach that contract with our customers. And
yeah,
and I don't think national or international law should be able to breach the contract between two parties unless there was some really good reason for it.
And it would be a lot more obvious invasion of privacy if the government had to keep going around and asking for getting warrants to search someone's desktop PC by going into your home and having a look at it. But because it's a bit slicker with the cloud data and it can do it a lot more easily.
Right.
They're without doing a lot more. Yeah, they're doing it without anyone knowing.
Haven't Microsoft customers already waived their rights in this regard by signing up to the end user license agreement, which has all sorts of provisions for accessing personal data and what have you?
Presumably, because it already happens.
I don't know. Do people read that?
Well, apparently not. No, apparently the only people that read that are people that operate in the open source community, but this seems counter to Microsoft's EULA.
Well, Microsoft want them to be able to access the data. It's not, but they don't want to have to hand it over to other people and not tell you about it. Or at least they want to now be seen not wanting to do that.
Yeah. And at least to be able to tell the customers that their data has been searched, except they said there's obviously circumstances where you don't need to do it immediately, presumably for a security, like a international security thing or whatever. But on the whole, they want to be able to tell the customers that their data has at least been searched. So your data doesn't stop your data being searched in that sense.
No.
Right. This rings bells with, you know, recent issues in the UK of people not being able to, via court order, not being able to say which celebrity had, a conflagration with one or more other celebrities or non-celebrities, and the fact that the court order said you can't report this, and you can't report that you're not allowed to report this. These like injunctions and super injunctions, this like oppressing the ability for people to have freedom of speech is quite fundamental, and I approve of Microsoft fighting this cause.
Yeah.
In other news, VPS provider 123 Reg has done a Laura and nuked their customers' servers.
Can I just make it clear that I am not a sysadmin. I would never work in hosting, possibly because I would be scared to, but nevertheless, I did not do a 123 Reg.
So the context of doing a Laura is now going to go down in the annals of, you know, RMing something or formatting something that you didn't mean to do. So what exactly did 123 Reg do that constitutes them doing a Laura?
Wiped their customers' web hosting servers.
Yeah. Ow.
Mm. So
they restored from backups like the next day and everything was fine, yeah?
Not quite, because unfortunately the customers affected were unmanaged customers, which meant that they didn't have a backup, you know, contract service with 123 Reg. So unless they had backups of their own, then...
Which everyone does religiously, don't they?
Oh,
obviously.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've been, according to their sort of regular updates on the situation over the past 10 days. They've been sending all of their stuff away to data recovery people to try and undelete the data and then create new virtual servers and restore them as they were. In the meantime, I suspect a lot of people have gone to another hosting provider.
Yeah,
and gone back to their designer who created their website and said, hey, can you
have you got a copy of those?
Yeah, can you export all that stuff out again? I've found another place for you to put it.
Yeah.
Wow.
This sounds a lot like that guy who put a post on server.
Yeah.
Server, what's it called? The like Stack Overflow, but for server admins. Fault. That's the one.
Yes. Only that. Saying, I just RMRF slashed on all of the servers. What can I do?
And all the backups.
You should talk to a lawyer.
And which turned out to be fake anyway.
Oh, did it? That's
just a
shame.
Viral campaign, yes. Yeah. It was pretty obvious from the start that this guy was pulling the chain.
Yes.
Given like what he was saying and then some of the comments. Someone suggested that you could use DD and offered him a command line of DD IF this and OF that. And his response was, I got the IF and the OF round the wrong way. Like, righto, you're pulling our chain.
Yeah.
There's no way you would get this far to ask a question and then actually get DD round the wrong way. Uh-huh. You are some incompetent fool or a troll. Turns out, troll.
Yeah.
Oh, well. It was fun while it lasted.
Yes. But in better news, Microbit goes open source. The BBC and partners who committed to open sourcing the BBC Microbit hardware and much of the software have done so. So you can go to github.com/Microsoft and there's a section for Touch Develop, which is the browser-based system for dragging and dropping chunks of code that you use or one of the options you can use for programming the Microbit. And it's open source. So you could create your own instance of Touch Develop and run it yourself, which is really cool.
And this announcement seems to imply it's open hardware as well, or as open as they can make it at least.
Well, on the on the Microbit page, it doesn't actually mention the hardware yet. But it does.
But they didn't open source everything from day one.
Yeah.
So, it talks about on their page, it talks about their commitment to open sourcing. Right. So that says to me, they're doing it bit by bit as resources allow and as time allows. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've got some other bits of software there as well. They've got the MicroPython, which is their implementation of Python 3, the Python editor, which plugs into Touch Develop to allow you to do Python editing, which then I think it gives it to you as like a hex dump of your code, which you then just stick straight on the Microbit, which is quite cool.
It is very. Yeah.
And the Microbit runtime as well. That's all sitting on GitHub.
Awesome.
Yes.
And finally, in our news roundup this week, we have that the Meizu Pro 5 Ubuntu edition is on sale now, apparently. When I saw this go into the show notes, I was thinking, is this for real or is this a joke? So is this for real or is this a joke?
Yes, it is for real. It is really? Totally for real.
Those websites are legit, are they?
They are totally legit, yes.
No way.
I'm not even kidding
it
you.
It does look a bit like they came from shadyurl.com.
Yeah, I know.
They do look like I typed random things into my browser and got a page to buy a Meizu Pro 5.
Shady.ru didn't fill me with confidence, especially jd.ru11043324.html.
Well, that's a product item code, I'm sure. I'm sure if you read out many like URLs, they'll sound stupid. But .ru, guess where that is? So that's for customers in Russia.
Yep.
But for everyone else, there's the other URL.
Yep.
Actually, when I arrived in Prague last night, I arrived at the hotel, dumped my bags, and navigated my way to a bar where I found all the other Canonical people. And one of the first things that happened was someone said, hey, look at this, and handed me a Meizu Pro 5. Uh-huh. And I'd not seen one before. Oh my gosh, they're delightful.
They look pretty from the pictures.
Yes, and they're fast, and it feels really, really nice in the hand. It's really nice.
Ooh, USB Type-C connector.
Is it? Oh,
that's what it says on the website.
Oh. Interesting.
Mm.
But it's a nice phone, and lots of computing things inside it. Stuff.
Yes. Hardware.
Yes, that's what I meant. Go and buy one.
Excellent. And that, I believe, is all the news.
And now it's time for the community news and maybe some events.
Mark. First up this week, Mark Shuttleworth has done his customary blog post to announce the code name for the next Ubuntu release, and Ubuntu 16.10 is going to be called the Yakety Yak.
I rather liked his blog post for this one. They're normally quite long-winded.
Yes.
Oh, I look forward to those. I quite like the idea of like reading through his prose about, you know, why he chose a particular animal and the reason for the adjective and all that kind of stuff. And this was just like, yakety 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 yak. Oh, okay.
So I've seen lots of people, you know, retweeting this or when it was first sort of came off Mark's blog, people saying, oh, let it be true. Is this really what it's going to be? This is going to be great. And I'm just kind of a bit disappointed that we're in for 6 months of yak shaving jokes.
There's already one on his blog post.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there must be. I mean, it's the immediate thing you think of, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I'm not a big fan of the name, but hey-ho, but it is for real because the Yakety Archive opened almost seconds after this blog post went out. And it's there, and all of the Debian unstable stuff is now syncing into the Yakety Archive, so it's a thing. It's for real.
Into the Yakety Archive.
Yeah.
There's a phrase I've not heard before, but we'll hear it again.
And again, and again.
Other news, Mozilla have posted an interesting blog post where they suggest that in the future, the near future it seems, they'll support the Snap package format for Firefox.
Interesting. Mm. Does
yes,
that mean that you'd surprising. Be able to run it on the Ubuntu phone? Is it more complicated than that?
Well, so what I think what they're talking about there is, like, if you install any distro, then... typically, you install it with a particular version of Firefox,
yes.
And Firefox, like many other modern projects, is iterating fast, and they churn out new releases every 6 weeks or 10 weeks or whatever. And they want to get that new goodness out to their users promptly. And typically, for Ubuntu users, that's been add this PPA in the past, but more recently, that's been someone at Canonical will... build a new version of Firefox and, you know, package it up as a Debian package. And there's a slight delay while they wait for that person, you know, to have the time to do that in order to get it into Ubuntu.
Yeah.
The idea behind Snaps is that the developer can package their own stuff and land it in the store, you know, whenever they want. So at the point when they release Firefox 578 or whatever version they're on now, they can immediately... they can have it packaged pretty much straight away on one of their build servers and shove it straight in the store as soon as they're ready, rather than waiting for someone else to do the packaging. And that,
excellent.
That seems like a compelling thing for them.
So does it include the dependencies in the package?
Yes.
It can do. It depends what the dependencies depends what the dependencies are. And you know, some of them will be in the base core image, but yeah, some stuff will be just like bundled in with it.
Okay,
next up, someone called Zoltan, who heads up the SDK team, has either released or announced the Ubuntu SDK IDE and dev kit release for the Ubuntu phone, possibly to a mailing list. The words
someone
are a bit jumbled.
I'm
trying to decipher
Martin.
Them.
Yeah, so this is just an email from Zoltan, who heads up the SDK team. So the Ubuntu SDK, for those who don't know, is based around Qt Creator and a bunch of helpers and a bunch of other bits and bobs that sit underneath that to make it easy for developers to create QML, C++, and so on, HTML5 apps for Ubuntu Phone. And a new release of the SDK came out that has some new features and is based on a newer version of Qt Creator, which is the editor IDE that's used, and a newer version of Qt. And it's all in a PPA. And interestingly, with, you know, going back to our previous conversation about snaps, I know the guys have been looking at ways in which they can snapify the SDK, so that in the future, the SDK itself would just be a snap that you install on your desktop. Nice. Yeah. So they could like deliver updates rather than having people add random PPAs all over the place, which seems like a cool way to go.
It's not a random PPA at the moment. It is the Ubuntu SDK PPA, but it pulls in just a colossal amount of dependencies. It's about the biggest thing you can add to your system.
Right. If you don't have Qt on there, you'll pull in half the world, much like having GNOME and installing KDE, it's the same kind of thing, isn't it?
And I think that's where snaps are going to really excel, is to bringing in those things that have a whole load of dependencies in order to support the framework or the tool and keep those isolated away from your system and not impact the rest of your system and potentially introduce incompatibilities along the way.
And also easily removable. You can just, snap remove a snappy package and it's gone. And all of the stuff that was inside it is gone. It's not like there'll be some orphaned, library lib foo somewhere on your file system. You nuke that snap package, the whole thing is, gone.
Cool. Ubuntu Studio has got a new project leader.
Yay.
Yeah, Seth Hallstrom was elected the new project leader and will take over after the 16.04 release, which is presumably about now.
Excellent.
That's good.
Yeah, and they said that the development team has increased as well, which is positive.
That's excellent. A good thing.
Yeah, it's fun. Ubuntu Studio, I remember going to UDS's years ago and the Ubuntu Studio devs being there, and they kind of had the prettiest desktop at the time. There was this dark theme, and none of the other desktops had a dark theme, so it stood out from the others. And they had really the branding stood out as well. The play on the Ubuntu logo was nice, and they all had sweatshirts and hoodies that had the logo. Yeah, yeah. Tony had one of those, I think.
Yeah.
I think he picked it up at one of the UDSs. So it always had a really, really nice look and feel, and was always catered towards very creative people. And I'm glad they've got more people on board to keep the project going. It's great.
And in other Ubuntu-based distro news, Ubuntu Budgie Remix 16.04 has been released.
It feels like we've mentioned this for like the last three episodes, and we say this every time. Are we repeating ourselves?
I think we announced before that it was happening.
And now it's properly happened. Right.
Yes.
Right. So they're now planning
past, present, future. Right,
okay. Future releases, and are hoping to one day become an official Ubuntu flavor.
Oh, really?
So excellent. Good luck. Sorry, that didn't mean to sound sarcastic.
Good luck.
Good luck with that.
Let's put that differently. Good luck with your application. Let's hope it goes well.
That's what he meant.
And in other flavor news, KDE Neon User Edition Tech Preview is out. It packages the latest releases from the KDE project from upstream Git based on 16.04. It's available as an ISO, so you can download the ISO. So it's got like bleeding edge packages on it. I think Jonathan Riddell is one of the people behind this. We've talked about Jonathan many times in the past. I think this is a great way for people to try the latest that's coming out of the KDE project on top of an LTS release. Sounds great.
I may have asked this before, but what's Neon?
Yes.
You probably told me and I was definitely listening.
Basically, it's they've got a Jenkins server set up which watches the repositories for various KDE upstream projects. Uh-huh. And when they release something new, it automatically builds them for Ubuntu 16.04, sticks them in an apt repository, which the Neon sort of distro is pointing at, and then it gets updates from there as basically as fresh as they come. So you can try out the very latest KDE stuff on top of Ubuntu 16.04. So this is at the moment it only actually has the Plasma desktop and the KDE frameworks. It doesn't actually have anything in the way of applications. So you then have to install those from the Ubuntu archive, but I guess they would get updated if they then get added to the Neon archive. At the moment, you don't even get a file manager or a terminal emulator. You've got Xterm, and that's about it.
Wait, so this is a lean KDE install?
Yeah. Really?
Say nothing. Moving on.
In other flavor news, Ubuntu BSD has a new website.
What is Ubuntu BSD?
It's free BSD kernel in Ubuntu.
And what is their new website?
White and shiny.
What's the address?
Well, it's ubuntubsd.org, but it'll be in the show notes.
Is it hyphenated? Is it Ubuntu hyphen BS? Why not? Why don't they do hyphens? What's wrong with these people?
They're passé now. Shall we move on to some community events?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay.
What's happening, Laura?
So first up, there's a Raspberry Jam. This time on the Isle of Wight on Sunday the 5th of June from 10:30 till 1:30. And it's free and everyone's welcome. And it's at the Black Gang Chine theme park on the very bottom of the island.
Awesome.
Yeah. And we'll put a link to in the show notes where you can book your ticket.
And FossTalk Live, which we've mentioned before, is a free evening of live Linux podcasts featuring Linux Voice, Linux Luddites, and us.
Us!
Yes, it's sold out, as in sold, as in the free tickets that were available have been allocated. But Joe has just put out a blog post, and we'll link to that in the show notes. And it basically says, if you don't have a ticket, you can still come along and you can join in the social track in the pub above the venue and you can be part of the goings on. You may not be able to get into the main event, but if people leave early, then you'll be welcome to come and join in the fun. That's happening
one in
King's Cross in London on Saturday the 6th of August, and you can find out everything you need to know from fosstalk.com.
Awesome. And finally, UbuCon Europe, the very first European Ubuntu conference, has been announced for November at Unperfect House. Have I pronounced that right? In Essen, in Germany. So that's, the 18th to the 20th of November this very year. And
I'm saving up. I really want to go to that.
I am quite tempted.
Yeah, it's a great place.
At the link in the show notes.
Excellent. Thank you. That's all the events for this week.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/ubuntupodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And that's all for episode 9. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing in depth the Ubuntu 16.04 LTS release. And we'll be bring you some command line love.
Excellent.
Excellent. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry for coughing and spluttering my way through that episode.
I would
like to say it's going to be different next week, but it won't. So look forward to that, listeners.
Hopefully fewer false starts next week as well.
But just as many pillows. So that's not changing. See you next week.
Bye.
And stop.